This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 92-year-old Bob Kamen of Henderson, Nevada, originally from Chicagoland in the Midwest. And for 16 months in World War II, he was floating in the Pacific like a bar of ivory soap. That was the name the military gave to what was a secret operation with a vital purpose. Bob spent his time on one of the six Generals. That was the nickname for six Liberty ships converted to ARUs, aircraft repair units. They were all named after generals. Bob was on the second ARU, the Liberty ship Rebecca Lukens, renamed the SS Major General Herbert A. Darg, which was actually the very first floating maintenance depot to ever operate in a combat zone. Of course, Bob didn't know that when this Army Air Corps cadet headed to Mobile, Alabama, and took over the Grand Hotel, where their training included abandoned ship drills in which they'd jump from a 30-foot platform. He would come to see how important oxygen was. The high-altitude B-29 bombers in the Pacific needed breathing oxygen for their crewmen, but there was no oxygen-generating station in the Marianas. At least not on land. There was on Bob's ship, and they would supply all the oxygen for those B-29s flying off of Tinian, like the Enola Gay and Boxcar, which would drop atomic bombs on Japan in August of 1945. These ARUs and Operation Ivory Soap also provide a great trivia question about helicopters that you can impress your friends with. I'll spell that out for you shortly. But let's get back to Bob, who had quit school at 16 to help support his widowed mother and five siblings and joined the Army Air Corps at age 18. Well, I guess I should ask you about the journey over there. Because here you sign up, you're hoping to fly, then they stick you on a ship. Had you ever been on a ship before?
Nope. Well, actually, we left Alabama from Mobile, Alabama, went through the Panama Canal, we stopped at Cuba first, and while we're out on the Caribbean, they had one sailor on a destroyer escort was with us. He got so sick because of the weather, we had to stop and tow him over to our ship, hand over hand, with him in a basket.
So they sent him in a basket across a rope from their ship to your ship?
Well, it's hand over hand, back over, because they were afraid he'd die over there, because it was pretty rough for a smaller ship. And he did fine on ours, but it was so rough there. I had a merchant marine chase me with a knife, because I was laughing at him because he got seasick, and I didn't. Well, actually, the only time he almost got seasick is when coming from Iwo to Saipan after the war, because I didn't have points to get home with our ship. And I got over there to get breakfast one morning, and the LCP, I forget what they were called, but a bigger landing ship, but they would rock. And our breakfast or food was set up on the fantail. And I got back there and smelled the fumes from that diesel. And I said, went back up. So that's the only time I ever really come close to getting real sick.
And here you are, you're just a teenager. And you're the only one of your siblings that's serving in the war. How hard do you think that was for your mother? I mean, your father's been gone since you were five. How hard was that for your mother to see you head off to war?
Well, I'd worked before going in, and I lived away for a while I was working, and she was used to me being there or not being there. She was all right, actually.
What about you? Was there part of you that was a little nervous or scared that this is going to be a dangerous situation for you?
No, I was too stupid at that age. But let's face it, there were a couple times you got scared because you're going in rough water because they had to take the ship out and we take the boats in to the island. Like one time we were going in, and all of a sudden I see one of the other ships with all the guns on, and gun pointing at us. And I, everybody ducked. That was it. But our guy that was in charge of us, he was a sergeant. He always had his life jacket on because he couldn't swim either. So we broke his habit by throwing one over, which was water-soaked so badly, it sunk. Then he got different life jackets for him.
And you described the makeup of that ship's crew here with the second ARU. You said the ship was run by merchant marines, you had Navy gunners, and then you had almost 300 of you guys from the Army Air Corps. So how'd everybody get along on that ship?
Fine. We had some very nice, good food. Best food to have. That's why the colonel was there when he went down. But they had a whole group of Marines with them, and we invited them over for dinner because they were getting lousy food on the island. And we had good food because when the ship would come in with supplies for the Navy leader would go over and get supplies from them. The Army did the same thing, the Air Corps. So we always had fresh fruit, everything good aboard ship. The only thing we had to worry about, I guess, why they keep it secret, because we would have been the first ship they'd have gone after, because we could get the B-29 off the ground again to go on its way.
Well, and that's an important point. So this was classified for more than a half century, and the reason it was so important to be classified then, if the enemy is aware of your ship's purpose, of what you're there for, they want to take you out because then they're cutting off the lifeline to those B-29s, which would end up firebombing Tokyo and eventually dropping the nuclear bombs.
That's about it, actually. They did take care of a couple B-29s that did come in that couldn't make it over or come back, and they repaired those. And so they can go back to Tinian or Saipan.
You said 16 months on this ship. So give us a sense of a typical day for you. How would you be spending that day?
I spend a lot of time to spend half time in the water or taking people in and out from the island or going to the island. And you couldn't swim in Iwo. The water was too cold. We were used to Saipan at the time, and I'd swim half the day. But then we got to Iwo, took some in, it was hot there, decided I was going go in for a swim, dove off the LCVP, and this thing stood about 2 foot off the water. And they said, yeah, the only time you ever saw me get out of the water so fast because it's so cold. I made it up there in one leap.
But the first place you guys anchored was Saipan, is that what you said?
No, we went through Panama Canal. Wait, we did stop at Cuba, too, where we anchored. Didn't have any shore leave, but we were there for a couple of days. Then we went through the Panama Canal, where we stopped at Balboa. Went in there. We did get some shore leave there. Then we went on the Inuitok, which we could see the other side of the island from our ship, which we were happy to leave. Then we went to Saipan, and Saipan to Iwo.
And as you're going to these places, are you getting a sense of what had happened there, of what had taken place to put those islands in American hands?
We had no idea what was there and on there, because we were just a repair unit. I didn't know the guns we had. We were attacked a number of times at Iwo, and we had an 8-inch on the bow, 5-inch on the other end. The captain said, don't ever shoot that 8-inch again. They shot it once, and every plate on the ship was rattling, so he said, that thing will shake the ship apart. So they had a lot of 20s on it.
Well, and you said that so matter-of-factly, like it's not a big deal. You said we were attacked a number of times.
Air raids. We had a number of air raids. But they were after bigger ships than ours. But
it's not like they tell you that.
No. That's why it was secret, I guess, and didn't tell us even.
So what do you do when there are incoming Japanese planes and they're dropping bombs? Where do you go, and how do you handle that?
We just stayed in the lower part of the ship, except some were assigned to assist the Navy gunners. They would go up and help them, but most would stay below deck.
I was just looking at some photos in one of your albums, and there are a lot of photos there of Iwo Jima, photos of Mount Suribachi, photos of what seems like an innumerable group of white crosses in the cemetery where Marines were buried there. What did it feel like to see those kind of sites there and realize the price that had been paid to conquer that little stretch of ground?
Well, actually, I went over there to see the cemetery, and there were a lot of crosses, which I had to find a friend of mine in the States. His brother was buried there. So I got pictures of his cross for the friend of mine in the States. He was one of the Marines that didn't make it. Actually, when we pulled in the Evo, there was bodies in the water from the Japanese and the island people that were forced to live there at the time. We're jumping off the cliff to get away because we were not friends at that time.
Well, how does a teenager handle seeing that, pulling up in an island and seeing bodies floating by?
It's not a nice sight to see, really. But it's worse when you see when they're burying the Japanese at that time. Well, you see pictures of them burying people in the movies. They had pictures of them putting the Japanese in graves with big truckloads of them and just covering them up. They didn't have crosses for them, but it was something different.
And you were able to find the specific cross honoring your friend's brother?
Yeah, got a picture. I don't know if it's in my book or not. But I gave him one, too.
What was his name, the one who died?
Coffin. My friend was Jim. He was Robert. They found it fairly easy. But they had some kind of plan or layout for the thing so he could find them, like cemeteries do now.
I don't want to put thoughts in your head or words in your mouth or be melodramatic, but when you're looking at a cross among thousands of other crosses on this little volcanic island, and the name there is Robert, do you imagine, hey, that could have been me?
No, it couldn't have been me because I wasn't a Marine. And the Marines were, when we were on the island there, we had a small base. And I felt sorry for the Marines that took the island. They came around, marched in full gear, heavy knapsacks, the whole thing. And they're marching around the island, keeping them up for the next battle, which I felt sorry for them more than me. Because I knew what I had, maybe get hit by something or ship sink, but that was about it.
So it sounds like, in your view, your job wasn't that difficult, or your duty wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't, actually. I had good food, good clean spot to sleep. It wasn't like Marines had to go in and fight. It was rough sometimes getting in because of the weather, but that was the closest thing we had to worry about. Like a ship would take off when we got on the island. When rough weather come on, it couldn't take the weather there close to the island. So they'd take off for a while. We'd take the smaller boat into the island and stay there. That's the only time we really worried. The only time I really thought it was funny thing, the lieutenant that was in charge, he was also one of the helicopter pilots. He come running out and he said, wait, and I'll go in with you. And he went down to get something, come back up, and about that time the wave coming at us was about over the ship, higher than the ship. He says, go ahead, I'll wait here. So we took it in, but he wasn't going to go in then.
And you mentioned that the Enola Gay, on its fateful mission in August of 1945, that it actually flew right over you guys?
We didn't know it was coming because nobody knew that. But we knew the B-29s were flying over close to us all the time, really. Not close, but pretty high up when they come by us. Because they had oxygen and everything else aboard there, so they could be up maybe 30,000 feet up there.
And you got, that was one of the things you guys did, was provided some of that oxygen for them?
We supplied tanks of it, not just for the B-29s, but for the P-51, P-47s. Because they needed it too. They would take the B-29 into Tokyo. Actually, the 51s were pretty well worn out by the time the war ended, actually.
Well, speaking of the war ending, you guys must have heard what happened in August of 45 when those bombs were dropped. Was that an eye-opener when you got the news of that?
Oh, yeah, because we had no idea the bomb was there. And that was on Tinian where they loaded it. We didn't see the plane go over because it could have been a couple of miles one way or the other. Didn't actually know. But I knew our 51s and stuff took off. We could see that, but we didn't know the bomb was going over.
And what about that news that Japan had surrendered? How big a deal was that for you and your buddies?
We knew we could go home then, but we were all happy about that, except the ship left without me because I didn't have the points. to go back. They sent me back to Tinian, where I started taking care of electric engines for the electric on the island for the group that I was in. And from there, I went home to San Francisco. Froze my butt off in San Francisco because I was used to the warm weather, very warm weather. Got in there, it was so cold, I tried everything I could get on to keep warm. And I caught the worst cold I ever had.
And you told me you joined the Army Air Corps because you wanted to fly. Then they stick you on a ship. But I think I also heard you say you did get to ride in a B-29. How'd you pull that off?
I'm just friends with them and stuff like that. I did stuff for them. One day I asked them where they're going. Told them they were going to fly up and back. So got on and went with them.
So where'd you fly from? Where'd you fly to? And what was it like in between? What'd you see? What'd you experience?
All we saw was water. Because... took off from Iwo, flew into over Tokyo, come back to Iwo.
And this was after Japan had surrendered?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't go in before that. Then they wouldn't take us anywhere.
I guess I should ask you, since you were in a pretty important place as far as the world said in 1945, you were in the area where some pretty significant things happened. Who were the guys that you appreciated or admired, maybe you even looked at them and said, yeah, those guys are heroes. Who would those people be?
The Marines, really. When I saw them marching around the island after taking the island, I said, those guys are unbelievable. They're long enough to take the island and then come in there. And actually, walking around that island was no fun because there was just nothing there to really see. Mount Suribachi was the only high thing. We could get on the beach, but didn't see any of those guys actually enjoying the beach or anything. The only time I saw them was when they were marching or when I went to the cemetery. There was quite a few.
Quite a few of those battle-hardened Marines visiting the cemetery on Iwo Jima because there were nearly 7,000 Americans killed on that island in a five-week battle. More than 19,000 more were wounded. That price of freedom is something Bob got to reflect on recently with a trip to the National World War II Memorial with Honor Flight Southern Nevada. And we're going to hear about that experience when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.